Chris, good evening.
Hey, man.
Hey, we are coming with a special holiday edition, yeah. Or I suppose, yeah, I'll say holidays. I don't want to be inclusive or exclusive here. And today we got with us Stan Robinson. And Stan, if you want to introduce yourself, and then we'll get a little bit into the topic that we're going to cover here.
Sure. So like you said, my name's Stan Robinson, my stage name, which more people probably know me by, Substantial. And yeah, man, I'm a hip hop recording artist. I'm also an educator. I've been working in both fields for nearly 20 years. And yeah.
So Stan and I went to school together a very, very long time ago. And we met up last April in Vienna when he was on tour going across Europe doing his hip hop work. And we had about 4 or 5 hours of conversation. And a lot of the conversation that we had was going through quite sensitive topics. And as we went along this conversation, I thought more and more, Stan would be a great person to have on this podcast to go over one topic in specific, which is going to be a sensitive one of why we're not seeing more Black people in the field of design. And the reason why I say that is
with the U.S. focus, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think either way, because I talked to Stan right beforehand, and I said, I don't want to use the term people of color, because you do see a lot of Asians in design. You see a lot of Indians in design. You see it a lot of Latin Americans in design, but you don't see a lot of Black people in design, whether in Europe or whether in the U.S. or whether in Asia. Coming from this conversation we had in April, I thought it was a great person to have on to talk about what is quite a sensitive topic. And Stan, the way that I'll preface this is going through a story that I think it made me feel really, you know, made me feel pretty rough. And this is how I want to open it up, which is a while ago, I saw somebody on LinkedIn, one of my old colleagues at Microsoft, present like a press release of somebody who had just joined at a director level. And I, you know, clicked on it and it was a Black person. And I thought to myself, like, I was just sort of like, oh, wow. Oh. And I realized to myself how much I never see anyone who's Black within the field of design. And it is so, so rare. And I had never really stepped back to ask myself why. And when I caught myself sort of being surprised by this person's photo, I thought, this is what I want to talk about with Stan, because it is such an incredibly sensitive topic. But the thing that I've always loved about you, Stan, is you're always so reflective, and you listen and you're articulate in how you think about these topics. And I've learned so much from talking to you, and I think having you on, will hopefully everyone else will learn a ton from this as well.
Right.
So that's where I want to start out, and I'd love you to take it wherever you want to go at this point.
Yeah, sure. I mean, just from my experience, right? And that's, I think it's important for people to recognize that, like, I don't want to say there is no right or wrong, right? I think everything, for the most part, a lot of things come down to perspective. What you've actually witnessed, what you've come across. And so I'm going to just speak from my experience as a Black person in the community, and then as an educator and what I've seen. And so basically, a couple of things. Number one, working in the schools, right? Just last year, I was at a different school. I was working at a school called Oxon Hill Middle School, right? And when I arrived at this middle school, one of the first things I noticed that there were no art classes at all in this middle school. Okay. Now, as a person who does visual art as well, even though I'm known as a musician and an educator, you know, like, that's how I met you, was being in art.
Both of us come from an arts background.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so for me, no art classes in this middle school, that was huge. So immediately I start, when I would see the kids drawing, I start talking them up, having different conversations with them, figuring out what their interest was, what they wanted to do with it. And because I saw so many kids that wanted to do this, like, I created an art club there at the school. Now, this art club, in a short span of time, in a couple of years, became so popular that literally the waiting list to get in the art club had like 50 kids on it, with me being able to service like 25 kids at a time. And then within a couple of years, it literally forced the middle school to hire art teacher there, just to kind of meet the demand, because these kids were clearly hungry for it. And so what you're starting to see, right? What I see is, number one, parents oftentimes, unless they have an arts background, or they have close friends who are artists, they know very little about the arts and the opportunities in it. If they have a kid who wants to be an artist, they immediately think that they're either going to be a comic book artist, or they're going to be or they want to draw, like, do cartoons. So part of what, my wife and I, we saw this issue, and part of what we do is arts advocacy. pretty much trying to educate people who don't know about art in a lot of these communities. So at Kwanzaa, it's Kwanzaa right now, and there's a particular day called Creativity, or it's called Kuumba, which means creativity in Swahili. Like, part of what we started doing is, like, because we have a decent amount of people from our community, from the Black community, that get together at this time, it's just like, yo, let's have a conversation about what art is, what design is. And then when we sit in the room, I do the same thing I had to do with this art club, which was like point out everything in the room and what field of art it was, how essential it is to our everyday, how, like, you know, how you make huge decisions in your life based on aesthetics, how well something is designed. It's extremely important. But the problem is, in education, oftentimes art is used like dressing, almost, right? Like, core classes are like the, you know, Common Core, and all of these other classes are like the main salad and this, that, and the third. And art is just kind of a dressing that they sprinkle on just to give it a little more flavor, right? It's not looked at as an essential part of education.
Do you think that differs between the white community and the Black community?
Absolutely. That's where I'm going, right? So now in my travels, right, and being someone that, like, you know, is blessed enough, even though I do a lot of work with at-risk youth in certain communities, mostly Black communities, you know, I've worked with private schools. I've done all of that. I've traveled, right? And so what I noticed, though, when you go to these other communities, right, communities with a lot more resources, it comes down to resources and exposure. And so you look at poorer communities and how schools are pretty much funded via property, or like part of the funding is from property tax. And so that means if you're in a community that's not, doesn't have as many resources and doesn't have as much money, the household incomes are lower, where they have less resources. So they offer the things that they believe essential based on what they can afford to do. And arts oftentimes is viewed as extra in those communities. But then let's say if I go to a school in a community that has like way more resources, a lot more organizations coming in to contribute certain things, major corporations donating computers and all of these different things, they're offering a ridiculous amount of classes that can literally, you know, it can alter these kids' future. Where oftentimes in these poor communities, they don't have access to those exact same things. And so naturally, in the poor community, it fuels the idea that if my kid goes into art or design, they're going to be a starving artist. But meanwhile, in other communities, it's like, even if the main drive isn't to be an artist, they still have had a decent amount of exposure to different fields in the arts, from graphic design, web design, the technology that they have access to. All of these things play a huge role in what these kids believe they can and cannot do. And, you know, I attended Pratt Institute. Blacks there made up less than 6% of the population of the school.
You don't want to know what Carnegie Mellon was.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that.
Yeah, because at Pratt, you know, we're in the heart of Brooklyn. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like Pratt's in a Black community. But even then, I mean, and that kind of says it all. Like, it's in a Black community, but the people in that community, a decent amount of them can't even afford to go. Even more of them don't know what it is. And keep in mind, I'm speaking about, like, this is like late 90s. So, you know, that community is a little different now. Brooklyn has changed a lot, you know, due to gentrification. So it's a different deal now. But you'd be surprised how many people didn't even know what type of school that was, you know, what it offered, what type of program. And that's why so many people came from abroad and from other places to attend it, as opposed to a huge amount of people in that community trying to attend. So anyway, it's all of these different things, man, just like that. I mean, access is huge. I will never forget, I was looking at private schools for my daughter when we were still living in Baltimore, another city that has a large Black population. The school that was right next to where I lived, there was a school walking distance from where I lived. And as somebody who was working in alternative programs in Baltimore, I knew a decent amount about the schools in the area. And I knew that school, like, I knew that was not a school I wanted my daughter to attend, just as someone who worked in education. I was like, I got to figure something else out, because they don't offer enough to kind of point my daughter in the direction, help to point her in the direction I need her to go. So we started looking at private schools, and I will never forget, man, I walk into a third grade classroom and these third graders are learning about cubism. Third graders, man. Like, now granted, this is a private school, but this is what I'm talking about. Like, they are introducing a concept that you and I don't know how old you were the first time you figured out what Cubism was, but I specifically remember being at Suitland High School and in
10th grade.
10th grade, exactly. You know,
10th grade.
And keep in mind, 10th grade at a school that had an art, that had a program for the arts. Because now keep in mind, like, would we, if we attended that school as regular students in that community, which was a Black community, would we even have been exposed to it at all had we not been in that specific program? And then think about
both of us. Both of us know the answer is no, right? I mean, we were in a different building at points.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and now there are rumors that, like, when they rebuild Suitland, the VPA program itself could potentially be on a separate campus. Like, you know what I mean? So it's again,
let me back up here for a second, because I think what's interesting about what you're saying is the VPA program that you're talking about, which is Visual and Performing Arts.
Yeah.
Right. Suitland, where we went to high school, which was in right outside of Washington, D.C. in the U.S.
Right.
This school was a magnet school. And I think that's actually worth exploring even that idea from a U.S. perspective, because in magnet schools in the U.S. are basically schools that reside in a neighborhood of one dominant ethnic group, whether it be white, Black, Latino. And then you try to pull in people from other communities of other cultural backgrounds or races in order to diversify the school.
Mm-hmm.
And what was so ironic about what you're saying is, I was the white guy coming to the predominantly Black school, and I was immediately put into another building. Right. They're like,
exactly.
Like, we can't put you in the main building. That shit's scary.
Yeah.
Right. And it just, I mean, that reinforces even more of what you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. There was the main building, which is where all the kids from the neighborhood went. And then there was the separate building, which had all the, resources for the visual and performing arts.
Absolutely. Man, it is so frustrating, right? I mean, one of the biggest challenges there was just like as somebody who works there now, it's just like talking to kids who aren't in those programs, who have no idea what it is they want to do when they're done with school, who have no idea what some of these concepts are, what some of these potential fields are. And it's like they're lost. They don't have any real direction. I mean, even the way people refer to the main building, right? And the kids in there, they call it like general population, like Gen Pop. You know what I mean? like it's a prison almost. You know what I mean? And so, and I think that speaks volumes, man, to what the issue is. The only reason why, we're still in contact, bro. I mean, other than the fact that you're a great guy, right?
Thank you.
Literally, man, if I had not gotten into that program, you and I would have never met. If I was never in a magnet school, you and I would have never met. I would never know what my options are. Because keep in mind, right, and this is where I say all of the cliches that you hear from a lot of Black men, I'd likely be dead or in prison, right? Because the reality is, even when I was in those special programs, winning awards, getting accepted to multiple colleges and stuff like that, I still had the typical challenges that someone in a poor Black community would face, right? My father was out of the picture by the time I was 10. He had passed. I had been like in several situations where I nearly was shot or stabbed or whatever, like all of these crazy stuff, things you hear about or see on the evening news or whatever, like those are challenges I faced even when I was in these special programs. So now imagine, take those special programs away, take that direction that I was given, right? Take those things away and now put me with quote unquote Gen Pop. Now those challenges that people face in those communities, like they're more amplified because now I don't get a break from it.
No, you don't get the technology. You don't. Well, I mean, design is a sliver, exactly. Right? But the broader technology. I don't know. You tell me at Suitland now, where I mean, you're back where we went to high school. Do they have in the quote unquote main building? So in the general school area, do they have classes that teach programming?
Yeah. So they have classes. I know they I know there's like web designers, fashion design classes and stuff that are available to the kids who aren't necessarily in those programs.
But you said available.
I don't know for sure.
So it's not core curriculum,
right?
Or anything.
So it's not mandatory. Right. Like you don't have to take it. You see what I'm saying? And that's one of the things I had to push when we're out here doing our arts advocacy, because I have a company called Substantial Art and Music. And part of what we do is show up like and collaborate with different programs, schools and other artists and musicians, and help basically offer these activities, these services, these classes, if you will, to people who typically don't have access to it. But yeah, man, the biggest challenge is people don't view art and design as something that's as important as English or math. They're starting to push coding more, right? And learning programming, different things like that. But the reality of it is there's still this whole idea that these core subjects, right, are the most important thing. I think we downplay aesthetics way too much, considering when we're out here and we see how people make their decisions, it's based on aesthetics most of the time. So like,
there's a reason I go out and buy, I mean, you know, this is going to sound very stereotypical, but why I go out and buy the Beats headphones, right? Like who's is like, why do you waste your money on that? I'm like, I like the way they look, right? You know,
right.
And growing up in the same school, I like Dr. Dre. Like, these two things make me want to buy them. And I'm 38, right? I'm like, I'm still susceptible to that. Even though I know they're not the best quality, I still want them because they look good.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and just going back to the technology thing, I think it's not just the issue of, like, making sure the schools have better technology, right? That's definitely a big part of it. But then the other issue is, you know, making sure that the kids are kind of taught how to use that technology to advance whatever they want to be. For example, I said this on, I did a post on Twitter maybe a month back or something where I said, I was like, you are as smart as the question you think to ask and the research you're willing to do, right? But the reality of it is, you know, you have some people, a good friend of mine, he said about young people when he was looking at certain things that were still happening in certain communities, he was like, yo, considering how much technology and how much access to information we have nowadays, that no one really has an excuse to be ignorant, right? That's what he said. And so, and I kind of looked at him, I processed for a second, and I was like, I hear what you're saying, but you still got to be taught how to, and like, how to question things. Right. Like that's something that people need to be taught as well. What questions to ask. Right. Because you can have all the access in the world, but if you're not thinking to ask certain questions, then you're going to just be a person who uses technology to either look up fights. Right. Because that's what people some of these kids are doing. They're watching fights online. Some of them are checking out whatever like female or male they think is attractive. Right. Well, watching their IG posts every day. Right. Some are trying to make that quote unquote love connection, right? Like you're using it for all of these seemingly trivial things to people in the technology world. But the reality of it is these kids don't realize that, yo, I can use this or whatever to kind of educate myself on these different paths that maybe I like would like to take. But in order to do that, you got to one, know what your options are. And then on top of that, be given some direction in terms of what it is, what type of questions you should be asking so you can kind of figure out like if this is something for you. That's what we had in those special programs that most of these other kids don't have. I didn't know what graphic design was until Mr. Surratt talked to me about it. And then Mrs. Kaneshiro had a conversation with me as well.
So these were all our teachers you're mentioning, right? These and then, like in high school, right? So this is already when we're 15 years old, 14 years old, you know?
Exactly. And so, you know, if I don't have people who are educated in those fields, right? People who are exposed to those fields, who can look at what my interests are and what I'm doing and be able to give me direction and say, hey, this is something maybe you could do. Without that, you're out here like aimless, man. Just like really kind of just scratching and clawing your way through whatever, just to try to find yourself and where you're going to go. And a lot of these kids have no idea.
So let me pause you here. Because Chus, you can't see. Chus is trying to give me a cue on, like, he wants to ask something. And I didn't want to interrupt, but Chus, man, what's up?
I want to make a point, and I think you'll have an opinion on that as well. What you were just saying about asking questions, I think that's what sets arts or anything design-wise apart from any of the other subjects being taught in school, except for maybe history. And the thing is that when you're doing algebra or physics or chemistry or even English, it's all about there's one proper way of doing things and this is how you do it. And there's no other way of doing that. Whereas arts is all about questioning and seeing what you think is right and seeing that there are other opinions that are also valuable and looking at it from every direction. And maybe history also does that, showing that there's always multiple sides to something that happened. But what I notice is that history is actually fading out as a topic of interest. People are much more interested in the now and whatever they can do. And I really think that arts can help people question things and see that there are multiple perspectives that can be right.
Absolutely. And let me just add this, right? And so here's the rebel in me. And this is what I say this in the school system all the time. I say to students, staff, all the time. Schools aren't in the business of creating free thinkers. They're not. The schools are in the business these days, for the most part, creating employees, right? Like good workers, you know, like they just people to kind of get in there. Don't question. Just take orders. Do what you're supposed to do. Literally, the school I'm at, the guy has said, my supervisor has said, or whatever, he's like, show up on time, do your work, go home. That's not exactly the most motivational or like inspiring thing to kind of get people excited about the work we're doing. And we're doing extremely important work. But that's the environment, right, that we're in mostly, right? To show up on time, do your work, go home. That's literally how teachers are dealing with kids as well, right? And so who benefits, right? Like I believe that the more free thinkers we have, the more artists, the more musicians, these people who I feel like the things we're doing, when done well, can literally make the world better. And there's no question in my mind. Like I truly believe that. I would not still be working in the arts in any capacity whatsoever if I did not believe that. That's truly how I feel. But at the same time, right, I really feel that it's so important, it's so influential that there's certain powers at work that recognize the risk that comes with having people, like a lot of people, educated in this. A lot of people who have maybe radical ideas, things that kind of like, you know, shift how things are working in society. The more people you have that are educated in the arts, right, that have access to this technology and can potentially inspire and lead other people using this art and technology, that's a problem for the quote unquote status quo, right? Now you're creating not just more workers, you're creating potentially more entrepreneurs, right? More people who can say, I don't want to necessarily lead the people in this direction, right? I want to take them somewhere else. And I mean, when you think of certain movements or certain things that have happened in history, right? When you think of Nazi Germany and part of what was done when Hitler, was kind of going through, it wasn't just about the extermination of people through just killing them. He stripped them of their art. He stripped them of their culture as well. These things are extremely important. What does art mean to a society? Oftentimes, like it's part of how we document our accomplishments, part of how we show where we come from, what we've done, what our culture is. We use it to help guide the next generation. And so if I can strip this people of this, take it away from them, it's like it takes away part of their humanity. It weakens a people. And I don't want to sound like this conspiracy theorist, because it's like the information's out here. This is things people can look up and see for themselves. I don't believe that it's a coincidence that in the poorest communities in our society, which are oftentimes filled with people of color, and in my case, Black people, don't have as many resources, don't have the access to technology, don't have a push in the arts and stuff like that to kind of help further that group of people, or quote unquote level the playing field, so to speak. But the beautiful thing about people is, even in those situations, and no matter how much has been taken from these people, the need to create, the need to express yourself artistically, the need to find different ways to design and manufacture things, even when you have limited resource, like it's something that we all possess. And so no matter how little people have, they still find a way. I mean, what's the quote is making a way out of no way, or like I just say making something out of nothing. When I look at hip hop, that's what I see. I think of the Bronx and what was happening in New York at the time, and what was going on with the between the gang violence and the drugs that was infesting the community, and how these arts programs, these music programs were taken out of schools, and people still found a way to express themselves artistically. No music programs, cool. We're going to make up this thing called rap music.
Wait, so let me ask you a question about that, actually.
Sure.
Let me back up a second, because one of the things that I was very curious to get your opinion on is that, is there a stigma? And I was super curious on this. around, you know, arts or let's say music that isn't, you know, hip hop based within the Black community. Like if someone goes in and all of a sudden decides they love Jackson Pollock and, you know, or expressionist art, or, you know, or they love, you know, they want to do this thing called UI design and it's all, you know, it's something completely different. As you said, these things aren't normally offered. Maybe these things aren't embraced. Sure. I'm curious, is there any type of stigma against that? Like, I mean, I, you know, as we were saying, you and me were the kids that were in the art building.
Yeah.
Right. And so is, does that type of thing exist? Like if you know, it, you have a daughter, if she comes to you and says, you know, hey, I want to do whatever, you know, impressionist painting, is she going to have a harder time in school or her friend's going to be like, you know, what the hell are you doing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It exists. The way you would often hear it growing up is, oh, you're trying to be white. And so, like, the funny thing is, you know, rock and roll, which is something that started with Black people, if you listen to, like, if you're caught listening to rock and roll, you're automatically trying to be white, right? But that's if you're amongst people who maybe just don't know any better. You're trying to, like, you know, you're doing a style of art that isn't necessarily popular amongst your peers in the Black community, then yeah, like, there's definitely a stigma that comes with that. But again, that's education, though. It all comes back to education.
I don't think that's something that I can only speak for myself or the people. I mean, Jesus, you know, we're both two white dudes, and the reason that I wanted to have you on is for this perspective. But I always felt like myself, the people around me, even I'll say even people with less economic means from a white perspective, still felt like they were said like, oh, well, you want to go into arts. That is, you know, it's not necessarily the wisest move, perhaps, but sure, we're going to support you on that.
Right.
And it never felt quite the same way. And I forget where I had heard this or seen this, but there was an irony in the idea that we make fun of, you know, people who do art until they get famous, right? We make fun of the people who are doing, you know, maybe, you know, not necessarily hip hop, but it's whatever it is until they get famous. And then we're like, oh, picture anyone in our school, let's say if they're a Black person who is doing tap dancing, it would be like, dude, well, you know, what the hell, man, you gonna get shit for that.
Right.
But then all of a sudden you go out and you're a backup dancer for Beyonce. People are like, you're the best thing ever. Right. And
right.
Like you had to get there some way. And I don't know. I mean, you know, like, tell me why that discrepancy exists. Like why all of a sudden when you make it, people are like, oh hell, like that was always the greatest thing in the world, but you had to go through this stigma to get there.
There's a lot of things at play, right? But I think that number one, there's so many challenges that come with being Black. And pretty much wanting to go into anything that people know, like, it's not an easy path. There's a lot of things that have existed. That there was an amazing play I saw years ago called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome that spoke to a lot of why we do what we do. Everything from whipping our kids to, like, how we interact with one another, like, how a Black woman and a Black man interacts in how these things are all system, like they're all symptoms of slavery. And so look at it this way. Like, let's change it from I want to be an artist. Or let's change it from I want to be an artist or I want to be a designer. And let's just change it to I want to be free. I just want to be free. I want to be free to live my life the way I see fit. Now, imagine me saying that to another slave. They're looking at me like, oh, you're crazy. You're going to get killed. There's no way you're going to be able to do that. Man, they're going to have you strung up by the morning. Most for your average person, and even Black people, they don't necessarily see, they don't always see those connections. But these are things that have literally been passed down generation to generation. This whole idea that you can't do that because you're Black, that's something that, like, our people have been dealing with for extremely long time. It's not an excuse. It's a real thing. So that's why the people, when they make it, it's a huge, like, it's not just like, oh, they made it. You know what I mean? It's like, man, I always knew that. Like, people are extremely excited in some instances. And you still got the crabs in the barrel, the people who, like, feel like, oh, they're not that big a deal. I know such and such who's better. That mentality exists too, but that's everywhere you go. But I think there are so many things that are directly connected to slavery. Or not, maybe not directly connected per se, but they are all symptoms of slavery, post-traumatic like slave syndrome. These things exist heavily within our communities, and it's one of those things that I think for people who don't really know the history, for people who aren't in these communities, it's easy to look at it as an excuse. But, you know, I just try to tell people all the time, I was like, man, there are things that you and your culture, you do, that have literally been passed down for centuries. There are things that have, that, like, depending on where you're from in the world, there are certain practices, certain things you do that was passed down to you centuries ago, and it still exists within your people to this day. That's true of all communities, all people. And so this idea that somehow slavery doesn't matter anymore and is sometimes, like, it's somehow not affecting Blacks in the United States specifically to this day, it just shows people's ignorance. I mean, it doesn't mean that all of us walk around like thinking that all the time, because a lot of us don't even realize the connection. I consider myself extremely lucky that I can even acknowledge the fact that, yes, that there is some connection to this. It makes me realize when I'm doubting myself in certain situations, how little to do it has with my actual intelligence and talent, and how much it has to do with this baggage that was kind of passed on to me that I had no control over. And then, you know, and just images that I constantly see. Here's the power of design. I'm going to give you a great example. There was this really great video that's kind of been going viral online. It deals with the movie Black Panther.
The Marvel movie, you mean?
Yes, yeah, the Marvel movie, yes. Black Panther. Okay. Yes. And it's, I mean, the imagery for that film, everything, it's immaculate. Like, everything I've seen, from the typography to the costume design, the graphic design of the posters, the filming, the writers, like, everything I've seen connected to this. I don't remember the last time I've been excited, this excited about a movie ever in my life. There's a picture of a group of Black people coming out of, they're in a movie theater, and they see the poster to Black Panther. And one of the guys in the background, you just hear him saying over and over again, he was like, yo, is this how y'all feel? He just keeps saying that over and over again. What he really is saying is this how white people feel? He's like, I'm looking at this, and it's just like, yo, like, he said, and I quote, if I felt like this all the time, I'd love this country too. That right there, man, like, that's, say, like, I don't know how else to say it to people. The power of giving people exposure, giving people the opportunity to be involved with technology design, allowing people to kind of be the face of these different career paths and stuff like that, putting it out there for other people who are in situations where they don't believe they can do something, just allowing them to be able to see themselves. And no one's talking about handouts. Like, that's the other thing. It has nothing to do with handouts and everything to do with just exposure.
So what I really think, let me go back from what you were saying a few minutes ago, and I want to come back to the Black Panther movie in a moment.
Sure.
But what you were saying a few minutes ago, just about the baggage that had come from slavery, and that, you know, some people may want to say, well, whatever, that was in the past. If we look at what you said just, you know, whatever it was, 20 minutes ago, where the school right now, and this is not just Suitland, this is not just D.C., I can tell you that, you know, being in Amsterdam, there's a majority Black area that's named Bijlmer, that's near where we are in Amsterdam on the outskirts, right? And the schools there, from working with people who work the schools, what you're saying is actually very, very similar to these schools here.
Mm-hmm.
But now if I look over, and I'm reading this book right now called Know-It-Alls, which is all about the history of Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks all about how Stanford and the schools around Silicon Valley were all this entrepreneurial spirit,
mm-hmm.
right? It wasn't just come in, do your work, and go home.
Right.
It was come in, you know, do everything you can to change the world around you.
Absolutely.
Right? Get rich off it and don't go home, go to a
Absolutely.
Bigger house. Right. And this whole thing of, you know, how Silicon Valley came to be this weird meritocracy that it is, so much of it seems to do with, you know, Stanford and these schools around the area that have built up this entrepreneurial spirit, which everything that you've said about, you know, the schools in D.C., I can tell you the schools here, which are, you know, when you just are dealing with the basic necessities and no one walks in and says, well, you know, go and do these things and go and change the world. No one says that to you. And then even at the same time, when I saw the trailer for Black Panther, what stuck in my head so much is I was looking around, I'm like, I don't see a white person in this movie, right?
Right.
And it's just like that. It's just like that comment I said at the beginning, right? With the person at Microsoft who was Black. And I'm like, oh, it was a Black person, right? And you catch yourself thinking these things. And then you have that moment of realization where you're like, damn, right? I never watch movie trailers thinking like, there's not a black person in here.
Right.
There's not an Asian person in here. You're just like, eh, it's like 20 white people. Of course, that's what it is.
Right.
You never think the opposite until you actually see the opposite. And then you're like, wait, where are the white people? And then you're like, ah, damn.
Right.
Like, you're like, really? Is this what the other side is like? Man, that sucks. Right. But you don't get that. Like, and I'm sure a bunch of people watch the Black Panther trailer and don't have that realization, which is why I wanted you on today. Because, mm-hmm. goddamn, I mean, it is such a big thing to just have that reflection and just, you know, say like,
yeah.
I never even thought about that. It's not like someone came and talked to me and I rejected the notion. You just had to confront it at some point, and hopefully you're open-minded enough to make that jump and make that realization.
Right, right. It's the ability, just the opportunity to see yourself in a way that like you've never been able to see yourself prior. It opens up a world of opportunity for you. It's hard explaining that to like groups of people who've never necessarily known what it feels like to not see yourself. And I mean, and it happens all the time in marketing, man. Like, I mean, remember that movie Home that came out? It was an animated movie called Home.
I do not.
Okay.
No.
So that.
Chris, do you know that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
So when they did the marketing for that movie, the lead character, she's a little black girl. Looks like she may be biracial or whatever, or based on how her mom looks when they show her, right? Rihanna literally does her voice. Rihanna is like one of the biggest stars in the world right now, right? This movie, when they marketed for it, they literally don't. The main character is her and this alien. Those are the main two characters. When they did the marketing for it, most of the posters that you saw, like on top of like cabs in different places, other places, was literally the alien and the cat. They cut like the main character. They wasn't even putting on a decent amount of the posters because of like the racial issues that still exist in this country today. But again, like, what does that for a little black girl who sees the movie? She may not be automatically thinking about all things dealing with race, but there is this feeling of seeing yourself larger than life, or seeing a character that kind of looks like you, has a similar hair texture. Those things matter. Seeing someone in the type of job that you never thought you could do or whatever, but you see somebody in that particular field, it makes you start thinking that maybe this is something I can do. It makes a difference. If the news is constantly showing people that look like you committing crimes each and every night and not reporting about the good things that people who look like you are doing each and every night, you start to buy into that narrative. It's not just the news. It's all over, right? And then in other communities where these crimes actually do happen, those same things are swept under the rug. They're hidden. You know what I mean? They're kept out of sight because people understand the influence that the media has, that imagery has on the people's mind state and what they believe they can do. Even the language that is used to describe people who literally commit the same crimes. Black guy commits this crime, he's an animal. White person commits that same crime or whatever. Oh, it's just a kid where did we go wrong with this kid? You know, I'm a kid, he's almost 30. What are we talking about right now? You know what I mean? And then you see it in so many different parts of society. So it's no wonder that it bleeds over into technology and all of these other different things. Never mind the side of it that like has nothing to do with your actual ability and everything to do with just your presence sometimes creates fear amongst people, like makes people uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Makes people think about things they may not want to think about. So how many opportunities do you lose simply because of that? How many times do I have to walk into a place and spend way too much time thinking about how I speak, what I do, and constantly? My wife hears me talk about this stuff all the time because I'm a lot of times find myself trying to make other people comfortable so that they don't overreact to like just regular things I do, because I got to remember I'm 6 feet, 200 pounds, and I'm a black guy. So, like, I can be the nicest guy in the world, I can be the best father in the world, a great husband, all of these things. You don't know that. People just see you on the surface, and there's that. So how many opportunities do people not get just off the strength of that? I had a great conversation with my friend Marcus D. Shout out to him. He's my producer. And, you know, he's just kind of been speaking to his experience living in Japan now, right? And how he's done it for a little while now, and he talks about like there was one point where he was, when he come home, he kind of complained sometimes about how he's treated. He's constantly reminded that he's an outsider, and he just talks about how that feels. And then he's having this conversation at one point. We had it recently, but then he had another point with another friend of mine. And they were just kind of talking about a similar thing. She spends a lot of time traveling to Africa. And she was just talking about how that felt and how it felt. And I was sitting there quiet, right? Because I was just like, this is so interesting, right? it was interesting to hear, right? As a black man, just listening to two white people talk about feeling like or being treated as an outsider. And what that felt like for that short period of time that they experienced, and then you know, and
so
go ahead.
You forgot the bit of the twist here, which for people listening, they probably assume Marcus is black, but I've met him and he's white, yeah, right? So that's why you're
yeah. And I'm listening to the conversation, and at some point they look over at me, and Marcus says, he was like, "Man, this is how you feel all the time." I was like, "Bingo! There's no escaping it." There's no escaping it. So going into different fields, being in the fields that I'm in, not so much on the music side, with the exception of when I travel, but definitely in the arts, definitely, in certain things I've been involved with, you know, walking in that room, you know, diving into a field that some people feel like you should have never even got this far. You shouldn't even have made it this far. Like, all the obstacles you had to get past to even get to this point. And then feeling like you're literally the representation of your entire people. Like almost every time you're the only one. That's a huge weight to bear every time. That's a constant feeling that never goes away. And I'm sure black people aren't the only people that feel like that. You know, I'm sure other minorities feel the same way oftentimes when they make it to a certain point. But that feeling is definitely way more amplified when you're the only one. It's different when there's a couple of you around, because you can kind of get a little comfortable. You all bond because y'all all have that feeling, but then there's a little more comfort. But when it's just you, you're constantly, and not everyone, you know what I mean? I'll speak for myself. That's a huge weight to bear while trying to be successful in a field that oftentimes folks who look like you don't even get to this point. It was just an interesting conversation, and he was saying that. He was like, man, every white person should know what this feels like. They should kind of be able to live in a place where they're the only one for a while, just to kind of know what that feeling is, and so they could better kind of understand and interact a little bit better with other minorities, other people of color who deal with this their entire life.
All right, man. So Stan, we could keep talking. I mean, I there are so many other things that I want to talk about, but like we normally do these in like 15 or 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
We're going for like an hour now. So I didn't even set you up at the beginning for how long I figured this one would run long anyway, because I know there's so many things we could talk about.
Sure.
But all I want to say, man, is thank you so much for being on here and sharing that perspective. I mean, these are always some of my favorite conversations.
Absolutely.
I know poor Husa said like three words in the entire, but he's just hanging out.
This episode is not about talking.
No. Damn well put, man. That was nice. So Stan, thank you again. And is there anything you wanna plug? Like you have a website or anything like that people can go and look you up on?
Sure. Yeah, my website is iamsubstantial.com. I just released some new music. It's my first instrumental project, mostly instrumental project, just came out. It's called Seed. It's a project that's leading up to my first full-length instrumental album called The Garden, which comes out in the spring of 2018. So, yeah.
Nice, man. Well, thank you again. And Chus, good to see you. And yep. I'll see you after the holiday break is over.
Yep.
Cool. Thanks. Later, man.
Bye.
All right. Peace, Chus.